When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester United weekly podcast with me, Jack Tate. I'm talking to you just a few short hours after Manchester United's gut punch of a 1-1 draw with Crystal Palace. After seemingly heading for one of those nights that goes down as a bad performance turned scrappy win, Casemiro's booking that rules him out of the trip to the Emirates this weekend, and Michael Olise's late equaliser turned the night sour. In the grand scheme of things, United's form after the World Cup still reads extremely impressively, although the manner of this result at Selhurst Park leaves us all feeling a little down this evening. Given the unfortunate ending to the Palace game, neither Harry, myself, or probably most of you want to dwell too much on tonight's game. Instead, you'll be hearing an unusually long preview of the massive away trip to Arsenal this weekend. Earlier this week, I sat down with John McKenzie, tactics expert at Tifo Football with The Athletic, to dissect the similarities of facing Arsenal and Man City, how United could fare if they set up similarly to how we did in the Manchester derby, and some of the key individual battles that could define the game. Sit back and enjoy this bumper tactics-focused preview. If you enjoy these longer previews, let us know on Twitter or by leaving us a review. You can find Harry on Twitter at HarryRobinson64, myself at UTDTate, and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. We'll be back with normal service being resumed on Monday as we go through what happens in the Arsenal game, hopefully looking back at a famous United victory that puts us firmly in the title race. Enjoy the preview, forget tonight, and roll on Sunday. I'm delighted to be joined now by John McKenzie, tactics guru of Tifo Football for The Athletic. John, thank you so much for joining us, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing really well. Yes, it's a pleasure to be chatting to you.
We're recording this on Monday afternoon after a bumper weekend of Premier League football. I'm in a good mood, John, as you might expect, after the Manchester derby. But we're going to be looking ahead to another huge game for United this weekend against Arsenal. Big game for United's potential title race credentials, which Harry and I are still very lukewarm about, to say the least. Before we specifically get into that game, I quickly wanted to touch on United results-wise have obviously gone up a gear since we've resumed football, domestic football, back from the World Cup. From your point of view, what do you think, if anything, has changed at United in terms of the way we've approached games, the way we've performed in games, or has it more been a case of just big players hitting form at the right time?
Well, I think you've had a lot of winnable games in a row after the World Cup. I think it's worth saying that. I know that's maybe a bit of a downer approach to things. But it's a fascinating thing, Manchester United's development this season, right? Because they brought in Erik ten Hag. He tried to maybe go a little bit too hard, too fast. That didn't work out. And then you had to get into the situation where he could attain stability, I think. That's the thing that they've done so well since those early months in the season, the beginning of this season. And the way that they've done that, I think, is by just going back to basics on a lot of things, being a very solid team, hard to break down defensively. I think the out of possession stuff has been improving a lot. There was games against Chelsea and Spurs that particularly stood out for me in terms of the out of possession stuff and what they were doing there. And yeah, got to a position where you are able to beat those teams. I've said these are teams that you probably should be able to beat, but I think you had maybe 7 or 8 games of against teams where you probably should beat them, and you beat them all. And that's a position that I think maybe in the past you haven't been in so readily. So definitely improvements there. And then the Manchester Derby, again, an interesting game because it feels as though when you see those bigger games, there's not a huge amount of difference between the way that you're playing in those games as you were under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah, now, completely.
The out of possession stuff is different and better, I think. But you're still looking to reduce the opposition getting a lot of chances and then hit them in counter-attacking situations. So in terms of what has changed at Manchester United, I would say primarily results. And that's an important thing.
Yeah.
But there is also these little things that are percolating under the surface, and they're really important things. I think the concept of control is very important to Erik ten Hag. He wants to be able to control games. He wants to make sure that he's not going to give away more than he generates. That's really important. But I think all of this, underlying all of it, is this idea that if you can get the team to a solid sort of performance level, regardless of results, then Erik ten Hag can then start making the really difficult, the final difficult moves that he needs to make in order to take Manchester United from being what I would see as, you know, a top four challenger to being a title challenger. I know that a lot of Manchester United fans will want to think that that step has been made now.
The table doesn't lie, John. Come on.
don't start. I've had that all morning on my Twitter. But there is a step that needs to be made, that where you can move from being, you know, a team who are solid, solid sort of top six team, who are going to be beating the teams that they need to beat and able to get results against the other teams in the top six. But at the moment, Manchester United still have a step to go, which is to become a dominant team of the sort of standard of Arsenal and Manchester City. And even though you have just beaten them, I do think that there is a step up to what it is that Man City can do. And that's going to be the big question of how the future goes. But Erik ten Hag has got to a point now where he can do that.
Yeah.
That's almost the hardest thing to do. How many managers have Manchester United had now where they have good managers in, but they haven't been able to get that kind of buy-in from everyone, the players, the fans and the board? And I feel like Ten Hag has done that by playing this maybe slightly muted football, which gets results. And it's really impressive. I said I was on the Devils in the Detail podcast the other day, and I said Erik Ten Hag is the worst thing to happen to Manchester United for a Leeds United fan because he has... He's achieved that holy grail, right, which was stability.
Yeah.
That's what Manchester United didn't have since 2013, no stability. And now that stability is there, and it feels as though the club is heading in the right direction because of that.
Yeah, it's the old adage, you know, results buy you so much time as a football manager. And I think it's, you know, Solskjaer had done some of that when he first came in, but obviously at that point he was only interim. And really, in his tenure since then and Mourinho's tenure before that, no coach had ever really got to this point where there was such buy-in from everyone around the club. And in some ways...
Solskjaer's interesting you bring him up, because Solskjaer for me was like the ceiling of this approach where, you know, you're gonna beat some big teams occasionally and you're going to beat smaller teams a lot of the time. And people and fans like that, right? Fans like to be a team that wins more often than they lose. But with Solskjaer, you were never going to get to that level of making that final step to become an elite side. And that's what you're going to get now with Erik ten Hag. So a lot of it still feels similar to the sorts of things that Solskjaer was doing. If you look at it at the micro level, there's still going to be games that you win against big sides and winning games against the smaller sides more often than not. But I think that Erik ten Hag is going to make that step up now so that you can start challenging teams like Manchester City and Arsenal at the level that they're at.
Yeah, and I think United managers in the post-Alex Ferguson era, especially since David Moyes, you know, you've got like Van Gaal and Mourinho in this type where the ceiling is maybe there. With Mourinho, it's slightly more questionable, but he's proven it in the past at least. But they sort of weren't able to get to the point where we're at now, where you feel like just getting the squad to play up to the potential of the players in the squad, just creating that stable base. Solskjaer was then really good at that first part, but maybe didn't have the ceiling. You know, Ten Hag has shown that now he's sort of done that first part. We think there's been proof in the past, especially from his time at Ajax, that he can go on and get us to that ceiling. And that is sort of now the next step, I think, for this team.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that.
So moving more specifically onto the Arsenal game at the weekend, How would you sort of sum up at sort of a high level the way that these two teams stack up tactically? Obviously, you had the game earlier on in the season. I think both teams have evolved quite significantly since then. How do you sort of view this matchup between the two teams and how their systems might play against each other?
Well, I think it's going to be exactly the same as the game against Manchester City, right? I think structurally the same sorts of ideas will be being played out. And what those ideas were obviously Arsenal will be copying Man City. They're going to have a very specific approach in build-up, particularly deep build-up. They've got a few different solutions that they can offer in deep build-up. So, for example, Manchester City in the derby went with a flat back four in build-up to start off with. That didn't work out too well, despite the fact that I think that maybe Pep Guardiola wanted to try and generate problems for Manchester United out wide.
Yeah.
And so they switched it up in the second half. They went to their more narrow, compact build-up structure. So one of the fullbacks inverting and making everything quite compact. And they did a lot to try and break down Manchester United's player-to-player approach in the midfield area. So you'll get your pivot player dropping out between the centre-backs to try and pull their marking responsibility out. We saw Kevin De Bruyne trying to move Fred around a little bit more. And with the extra player in the midfield area in Kyle Walker, that potentially poses problems for Manchester United's pressing approach as well there. I think Erling Haaland dropped in a lot more as well. So the idea there was to pull around midfielders who need to stay central into wider areas or deeper areas, and then move other players into the middle to then try and dominate those sorts of battles. And to be honest with you, I think largely that worked. I think Manchester United were really good in the first half, keeping City quiet. City changed their structure up. Manchester United deservedly went behind. And then in the final 20 minutes, you really upped the intensity. You'd brought Antony on as a nine, and that hadn't really worked. Moved him out wide, and suddenly your pressing was back up again. And obviously, because City had the goal, they were trying to sort of take the sting out of the game a little bit, and you really took it to them. Obviously, a massive stroke of luck with the first goal, regardless of what we want to talk about with respect to the I's and T's dotted and crossed of the rules. But that changed it. And I think at that point, I think Manchester City's heads will have just probably been a bit rattled by that.
As we've seen a few times under Guardiola, in fairness.
Sure. Yeah. And a case of, you know, here we go again. This sort of thing is happening. But I think, you know, look, you played really well in the final 20, got a big chunk of XG in that part of the game. But for me, the big challenge is going to be the same with Arsenal. It's going to be Arsenal are going to try and build up through you, and you'll probably try and stodge up the middle again, try and make it hard for them to do that. Questions are going to be, can Arteta find that solution that causes the breakthrough of the goal? And you're going to try and hit on the break. You know, it works because it worked last weekend, but it is a sort of high variance approach, right? You're trying to keep a very good attacking team quiet and then take your chances when they come. So I think it will be much of the same going into that game. So, fascinating. And with the results going the way that they've gone, everything's sort of really nicely poised at the very top of the table.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned it's a high variance approach, which I completely agree with. And it also feels like an approach that's very dependent on not conceding an early goal. Because you concede an early goal like Spurs, you know, formation-wise set up very differently to United, but I think in that general approach of soak up the pressure, use our pace and our ability to hit on the counter-attack, you know, they concede after 15 minutes yesterday, and, you know, that game plan goes out the window. And I think that's also the big challenge for United, because concede an early goal against City or this weekend against Arsenal, and then you kind of have to take the game to the opposition, as we did in the final 20 against City at the weekend. But it's much easier to do that when there's 20 minutes left rather than 70.
Yeah, and this is why it's really important that the out-of-possession approach that Erik ten Hag has brought in at Manchester United is there. Because I think I've just done a podcast this morning on the Tifo Football podcast, and we've talked a lot about how Antonio Conte seems to have like two temperatures when it comes to pressing. We'll sit in a low block and absorb pressure and then try and generate space that we can then transition into, albeit through trying to build up through a press. But if you can't do that, then you'll just end up lumping it long.
Yeah.
And then just allowing the ball to come back to you and you sort of get into that mindset. Whereas in the second half, City, sorry, talking about too many teams here. Spurs came out and were a lot more aggressive in their high press, caused Arsenal a lot of problems in that high pressing, and then seemed to get back into the game a bit, certainly in terms of the underlying numbers. So what I think with what Ten Hag offers is like maybe something in between that, which is to retain control in the central areas of the pitch, which means that you're then not just either exhausting yourself with constant high pressing, or just sitting deep and allowing a good team to have a lot of possession, because if you do that, then you will get killed at that part of the table. So super important for Manchester United has been the ability for Manchester United to control games to an extent in the centre of the park without just simply being, and that's the difference between Ten Hag and Solskjaer, I would say, is that with Solskjaer, you never felt that the out of possession stuff matched the in possession stuff. And now there's a lot more balance between those two.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And if United were to approach this game very similarly to how we did in the City game, where, you know, we sort of had Martial, Eriksen, Rashford, Fernandes as a press that, it wasn't a high press, but quite high up the pitch at least. And Rashford and Fernandes were very narrow, and we sort of forced City to go wide, which is, it kind of worked. There were a few moments very early on, like you mentioned, where Cancelo made some good forward runs. Man City never quite exploited that space out wide. I guess the thing that I'm slightly worried about going into the Arsenal game is that it feels like Arsenal have much more ability in those wide areas with Saka and Martinelli to actually just take that battle on and go at, whether it's Wan-Bissaka, Malacia, or Dallow and Shaw, take them on as 1v1s, get the overlaps with the fullbacks. It feels like they are more suited maybe to be able to play in those wide areas than Man City are.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need me on this podcast. You know all the answers. But yeah, Arsenal are playing a lot better than Manchester City at the moment anyway, as a base level. But yes, I think there's definitely different profiles of fullbacks that are available to the two managers. So we saw João Cancelo and Kyle Walker being played in the Manchester derby. And more recently, Kyle Walker has been played as sort of an outside centre-back hybrid fullback. You want him to be in that three at the back when they shift into that shape in possession. But also he's like a very, you can invert him, but he's also very, very good at defensive transition. So you want to make sure that he's not going to be getting too far forward. He's not really like a final third, certainly not now. A final third creator. Same as João Cancelo, he's going to want to cut inside generally and operate in half spaces. And I think, yeah, he can be good at progressing the ball in those wide areas. But when you consider that Arsenal have a number of players they can play as classic fullbacks, so you've got Ben White on the one side. Like Ben White may be similarities with Kyle Walker in a lot of respects, but he is like a ball carrier and progressor in that wide space. And then you can use Kieran Tierney, you can use Zinchenko operate as a more sort of classic fullback in that sense, etc. So yeah, the big question is going to be how much problem they can cause in those wide areas. And the reason those wide areas become so problematic is that Manchester United go with a high press of three players against a back four. So you, if you're smart in build-up, you can always manipulate them to create a free player in the fullback. And usually what happens, most elite teams would have their fullback jump in those situations. So let's say that Ramsdale is going to play the ball to Ben White in the right-back area.
Right.
And in the lead-up to the build-up, what's happened is the Manchester United front three have gone on the opposite side fullback and then the two centre-backs with their front three. So Ben White is in space. Ramsdale plays one of those wedge passes into Ben White. Usually what most teams would do in elite football is have their fullback jump on the other fullback there. So run all the way down the field and put them under pressure. But Manchester United aren't doing that. I think because, again, like, Ten Hag wants to prioritise solidity over anything else.
Is that because you think that pushing your own fullback on that much, it just creates a much more precarious situation? If you win the ball back, great, you're much higher up the pitch. But if they're able to beat that player, there's obviously a lot more coming back. So Ten Hag's taking a slightly more cautious approach, maybe?
I think that's the only explanation really I can think of. I've seen people suggesting that like he likes to control the build-up in certain ways. So it's almost like, control the opposition build-up in certain ways. So you want to force the ball towards the weakest player in the build-up for the opposition.
Right.
But I mean, when you're coming up against teams like Man City and Arsenal, like that becomes pretty much a moot point. They have good players. So I don't know. But yeah, I think it's more to do with that. They don't want to see the sort of the defensive aspect of the back line, and then generate these spaces. I mean, this is what's killed Liverpool, right? In the last season, they push Alexander Arnold and Andy Robertson on the other side, and they allow this space in behind. So you, effectively, oppositions can just progress the ball in the channel, in behind the fullback. The back line has to then become one player short, and you know, on Robertson's side, Van Dijk becomes the de facto defending left back. And then what teams are doing then is overloading Trent Alexander-Arnold at the back post because they know he's a bit weaker in the air. Get the ball into that area, get the cross to the back post, and you can cause problems in that way. And I just think Erik ten Hag just doesn't want to risk that. So he would rather allow the opposition to progress the ball in that space into a fullback rather than behind a fullback. The other thing is, the big question is going to be, like, is that going to change in the future when maybe Manchester United players get a little bit more comfortable with switching marking responsibilities and stuff? But at the moment, that's the way that it is. And I thought that City could cause quite a few problems, potentially just getting the ball to the fullback and running into that space. But actually, it turned out that they were able to open up the centre a lot more and were much more dangerous in the second half there. So, yeah, I think that's what we need to watch out for, whether or not the same sort of thing happens, whether or not Arsenal are able to exploit that space a little bit more. I suspect probably yes, because I feel like Arsenal, you know, you've already said they've got Martinelli on one side and Saka on the other, who feel a little bit more important in terms of build up players for Arsenal than maybe the wide players for Man City. And then you've got players like Ødegaard and Xhaka in the middle then, who, if you do drag the play one side or the other, you can then play those out balls into them in the centre. And we saw what Ødegaard can do from that sort of distance and space.
And in Nketiah, you probably have a striker who's maybe slightly more naturally used to being involved in build-up than Haaland is for City. Even though he did drop deep, it's just not his natural game.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So then, going from this sort of high level to the last thing, some of the key battles on the pitch. One player in particular I want to focus on is Martin Ødegaard. You mentioned him, been probably alongside Marcus Rashford, one of the form players in the Premier League. We saw United against Man City deploy sort of kind of this man-marking style system with especially Fred, the big focus on Kevin De Bruyne. Do you expect that Ten Hag would go with something similar with Fred on Martin Ødegaard? And if so, do you think that Ødegaard is, well, I mean, City did kind of take advantage of it in the second half, but in the first half at least, you know, we didn't really see them take advantage of the disadvantages that system kind of brings about.
Yeah, I suppose the thing that I would be thinking is, if Arsenal are playing pretty much the same, like, overall style as Manchester City, then Arteta will look at the game at the weekend and will know what's at stake. So he'll know, he'll look at that and say, first half, flat back four, trying to build up in wide areas. Second half, central build up, try and overload the centre but pull players out and generate space in the middle. That doesn't mean to say that he won't come out and play with a flat back four. And try and actually get the advantages that Guardiola was trying to get in the first half and say, I think we're better placed to do that because of our personnel. Or he may just come out and start off straight away with that sort of overload the centre and pull players around. And, you know, the problem, I think, with the way that Manchester United are approaching these big games is that going man for man in midfield is just so risky against...
Yeah.
Any sort of talented team, because
I can remember back in the days when it was Ander Herrera doing this, just kicking Eden Hazard around Stamford Bridge for
half an hour. That game too. Yeah, and it obviously works because, like, no one does that so with so much regularity. Leeds United are another great example of that, right? First season in the Premier League, man to man system, teams just not used to the intensity, not used to the transitional sort of breakdown that occurs. Second season, everyone recognises, oh, all you need to do is generate space for your centre-back to run into, pull players out of the way, cause all of these problems for man markers where they have to question whether or not the player that they're marking is less dangerous than the player on the ball, and it will fall down eventually. And that's the risk that Erik ten Hag is going to run with this approach. Will a team like Arsenal be good at sort of causing those sorts of problems? So dropping your pivot player out of the of the middle to pull a player wide, to pull a player deeper, pulling central players wide when there's space there, and moving wide players into the middle so that it causes problems for your marking system as well. I suspect, personally, my gut is that Arteta will come out with some kind of maybe 3-2 system in build-up, so push one of the fullbacks inside, invert them, and see what that does to Manchester United's approach. And then, yeah, have lots of... I think the trick as well for Manchester City in the derby was they played a lot quicker in the second half. And again, that's just a pure response to man marking approaches in the middle, because if you do that and you even just carrying the ball, and that happened a lot more, I felt, in the second half. If you're carrying the ball, you're pulling players out of position and you're creating space. And a team like City, who are going to be super structurally aware, they're always going to try and get players into different parts of the pitch. Once they start doing that, then it becomes much harder to match them player for player as well.
I mean, that's really where City's goal came from. Not necessarily from a ball carrier, but Fred was dragged out of position. He ends up kind of playing as like a left wing back because Walker's down on the floor, Malassia's with him, and then De Bruyne comes into that left kind of half space, and that's where the chance of the goal comes from. I think these are all, you know, the point you made there at the start, saying that, you know, it's tricky to do this twice in a row. It's tricky to do anything twice in a row unless you really are incredible at executing it. And especially in out of possession stuff, it is, once you have one game to study and what an opposition could produce in this game, you can plan for it much easier. It took Man City a half to adjust. Arteta's had, you know, 90 minutes to watch this system in place.
Yeah, you have to be lucky to have it work once in a row, right?
That's the
long and short of it, is that most teams...
And really only work for 45 minutes, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the second half, massive swing of luck with the actual first goal, and then, you know, anything can happen after that point. And yeah, again, this is not me saying that Manchester United were lucky to get a win against Manchester City. But, you know, you almost have to be lucky to get to a point where you can earn a win. Yeah. Against a team like Man City, and there's no shame in saying that. And there's a lot of teams who've, you know, played really, really well against Manchester City and lost. And look, but for that goal, if that goal is disallowed, there's every chance that the result would have gone the other way as well. So it's just one of those tricky things. You've just got to take it and say, look, at this point in time, these sorts of results are almost like bonus, because in the long run, this isn't the way that you're going to be wanting to play against teams like Manchester City. So yeah, I think you take these sorts of results as bonus, and if you can get two in a row, brilliant. If you only get one of those two, I still think it's a really good turn of output, but also like a really good indicator of how far this team have come under Erik ten Hag as well.
Yeah, massively. Harry and I talked a lot on the weekend episode just about even symbolically how this game felt like a big deal for this team, just to, as evidence of how far you have come since the 6-3 to now beating Man City 2-1. And in fairness, I think, you know, Ten Hag said himself after the game that United were good in the first half, poor in the second. He said, you know, he admitted the goal was very lucky, which, you know, I think we all acknowledge. So I think there isn't. I think some of the media coverage maybe has been sensationalising a little bit of what Man United produced in that game. But I think Erik ten Hag at least seems to understand that, you know, this probably wasn't the kind of game where United dominated and absolutely 100% deserved to win. I think we probably did enough in the game to win, but there was a lot of luck involved in making that happen.
Yeah, and it's worth saying as well that this is the same approach that you used in that first game, right? You went very player for player in the midfield, and it absolutely didn't work. So it's worth remembering that, like, one, you've come out with the same sort of tactic and had the result reversed the other way. But two, that does suggest that, you know, that's how much of a knife edge it can be against a team like City. Like, get a few goals and they're just going to run away with it, playing that system as well. So it's high variance, as I say. Manchester United played really, really disciplined game through the first half and in the second as well. And then to have that, the wherewithal to then not give up when the first goal goes in, and to have enough in the tank to then just go very aggressive, get City in their build-up at the back and come away with, you know, a couple of goals, regardless of how lucky, like, that's still a really good indicator of where the team is at mentally as well.
Yeah, no, massively. And I think that's where some of the intangibles of some players like Casemiro and Varane and Bruno Fernandes adding a little bit of steel to this team has, you know, been a big part in this uptick in form that we've seen recently. You mentioned that it is a high variance approach, and I think that's why the end game for this Erik ten Hag Manchester United team is to be able to have control on the ball in these games. You know, I don't think this is something that we will see for the next, you know, 3-4 years under Erik ten Hag. I think it is, as you mentioned before, it was the way that we've played all season has kind of been a response to going too far onto sort of the dogmatic end of the scale in those first couple of games. And I think we're still seeing that. I think the interesting thing for me now is how long United stay in this sort of in-between stage and at what point Ten Hag really tries to shift to becoming a more dominant team on the ball in the mould of an Arsenal or a Man City.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering that Erik Ten Hag was brought in as an Ajax manager to Manchester United. Right? Ajax do not need to play this way against any team in their division. The ideal is to be able to get back to that sort of position as a Manchester United team. Obviously, the league is a lot more competitive, I would say, at the top end, the Premier League.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be exactly the same, but the ideal is going to be able to get to those that sort of position where you're able to dominate those games in every phase and not have to be reliant on the opposition not taking the chances when they come up. But yeah, I think everything is heading in the right direction.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, and then that really brings us full circle to what we said at the beginning, that the challenge for Ten Hag was, we know that you can do the really high ceiling stuff. You've proven that at Ajax. Can you get us to a point where you even have the time and the ability to make those changes? And, you know, he's sort of done that, having gone away from some of his principles. Now, sort of the next step of the journey is, can we get to where that, somewhere close to where the Ajax team played anyway?
Like I say, as a Leeds fan, all of this is totally disgusting. It terrifies me. So, yeah, that's, I think, the best indicator that I can give of how well Erik ten Hag has done.
Well, I won't force you to talk about it for one more minute. John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much. Where can everyone find you on socials?
Yeah, just go to Twitter at John_McKenzie and you'll find me there too regularly, I'm afraid. But.
And you've also started a new Twitter account reposting other people's tactics threads, haven't you? Which I've thoroughly enjoyed reading.
Yeah, I just wanted to maybe give a little bit more exposure to a lot of the really good work that is done out there. Obviously, I don't just sit down in front of a TV and come up with all my own ideas. I benefit from really smart people out there. So, yeah, it's called at Tactics Archive if you're interested in that. And all I do is I literally share the pieces that I read or threads that I read or videos that I see that I think are really good and useful and share them in there. There's no fluff beyond that. So if you want to just get a nice source of tactics writing or blogging or threading, then head over there.
Yeah, very good Twitter account. I thoroughly enjoyed reading everything you've been sharing, John. Again, thank you so much for joining us, and fingers crossed, I'll be coming back to you next week after a United win. Although maybe not for yourself as a Leeds fan.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to our games either, but...
Well, I did see that you shared earlier about maybe Iraola coming in as a true kind of Bielsa spirit replacement after Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. But yeah, good things never happen unless you're a Man United fan. So there you go.
And on that note, it is time to end. Everyone, thank you so much for watching. We're recording this on Monday. As I said, you'll hear from me, will have already heard from me talking about the Crystal Palace game. Fingers crossed we're already winning that one and we can go on and roll on to the Emirates on Sunday. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.
Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.